The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
I'm Scott Jagow, your host, but we have two experts to answer your questions today on the Garden Hotline. That would be Steve Millett returning. He's a pest and plant doctor. And new to the program today, we have Jerry Pence. He's the program director or coordinator for the horticulture program at St. Louis Community College on the Merrimack campus. Jerry, welcome in.
Thanks for having me.
I'd like to introduce him because he was my former boss when I worked at Merrimack. And I tell you, he is a great professor, and the students just love him. And in fact, he was so good that he was nominated for a National Teaching Award, and he won, what was it, 2018 or something like that?
Last year, actually.
Last year? Yeah. So he's nationwide one of the best horticulture people we have. And in Missouri, it's probably one of the most leading horticulture programs in the state.
Indeed,
And how many students do you have?
We have close to 200 students in our program.
Wow, that's a lot for horticulture. And so it's changed a lot over the 20 years that you've been there. I remember when you had a putting green in the back.
Yes.
Golf course superintendents, that was a big industry to get into at the time. Now it's kind of not as lucrative, I guess we'd say. What sort of changes have you seen, and what kind of new programs do you have now at Merrimack?
Well, we've seen quite a few changes, actually. Our students are really clamoring more for the native plant direction, ecological sort of direction. And so we've catered our program to accommodate that. We've introduced some native plant classes. We introduce natives to pretty much all of our classes, actually. We've also recently started a cannabis and hemp certificate of specialization.
A cannabis and hemp. Did you hear that?
No, I heard it. Yes.
All right. On KMOX, cannabis. All right. So that's that. And how is that going? I know you hired somebody from Danforth to help out with that.
Yeah, it's just starting. So we're in the kind of infancy of that. So we're Yeah, it's a 4-class certificate.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you guys get past the federal issue of that?
Well, it wasn't really that difficult. You know, as an education institution, really what our job is to train students to get jobs in the industry. That's really what our focus is.
Okay.
And it is a legal industry in the state of Missouri, so
correct.
I would imagine that's not that difficult.
That's right. Made it a little easier.
Yeah. So, in terms of that, though, what exactly do the students learn?
In that particular?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have 4 classes that are associated with that. We have a general sort of plant science class that goes with that, so they learn how plants work. And then they have an introduction to cannabis where they learn a lot of the legal restrictions and things that go along with that. And then we have a cultivation course. And the cultivation course, they get to actually work with hemp plants for the entire semester. So they grow them on, harvest the flowers, that sort of thing. And then lastly, we have an extraction class where they learn how to extract, which is something they'd be doing going out into the field.
So these people would probably be working for dispensaries? Is that what you're saying?
Actually, maybe some dispensaries, but more manufacturing.
Okay. Yeah, the cultivation. Yeah.
Farms.
The cultivation, right, exactly.
Okay. Well, our phone number is 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. You can also call 1-800-925-1120, 314-436-7900, or 1-800-925-1120. That is the Garden Hotline to ask a question for Steve and or Jerry today. They are our experts on the program. Last week, we talked about we talked with Mike Miller's wife, Tracy, and, you know, he's been going through some difficult health issues. There is a GoFundMe page that is available to donate and help out in this time of need for both Tracy and Mike. We actually talked about it last week and raised quite a few $100 during the show.
All right, let's try and do that again. Break it this time.
Yeah, let's do it again. So it's called Mike's Epilepsy.
Epilepsy.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's the correct title of the page.
Okay.
And we are sending our regards to him and Tracy because they are in a trying time, and the listeners care about Mike. He's been doing this show for 30 years.
And he's a great man, and prayers go out to him and Tracy and all his friends and family. and even the family here at KMOX and our listeners. I mean, I know we get a lot of people call in asking about Mike, and I can feel the love for Mike, and he's mm-hmm. really loved by the city.
It is true. Well, let me talk about another flower today.
Mm-hmm.
It is May 4th. It is the first Saturday in May. Do you know what happens on the first Saturday in May?
The
Run for the Roses.
Oh,
it
yes.
is the 150th Kentucky Derby at 5:57 p.m. Central Time tonight. It's one of my favorite events in the world.
Yeah.
Because I used to work in the business. I
yeah.
was in the thoroughbred racing industry for more than a decade. And I always spend weeks and weeks preparing for this. So I'm curious, because it's roses, you know, there's ways you have to care for them to drape them over the horse, and there's roses everywhere around the track. And I know that it's a huge project. So what are kind of some of the things we should know about roses?
Well, there's lots of different kinds of roses. You know, we have the hybrid tea roses, which are the ones, the floral roses that you see in florist shops, which you get in arrangements when they get delivered. But then we also have a lot more less maintenance roses, which are the shrub roses. So there are issues that come with those, but they're really popular in the landscape now. Roses, you know, they're kind of called carefree roses, and so they're pretty easy to take care of. Just a lot of full sun and decent amount of water, and you're in pretty good shape as long as you don't have deer and you don't get Japanese beetles.
Yeah,
and,
or the mites, yeah.
Or the mites, yeah.
And the virus.
There are a lot of issues that come with roses, so it's kind of a little bit of a love-hate relationship.
Yeah, and the aspect of the florist, that's an art.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and, you know, I had, when I taught some classes for the ag teachers, we had a couple florist people come in and teach, and it's just amazing the stuff that they could do with that. They cut the stems down way low, and they wrap it, and then they pin it and, you know, make a corsage, and it's just fascinating seeing all that put together. But, yeah, those wreaths at the Kentucky Derby, that's just beautiful.
Yeah, and I know it is, as I said earlier, it is a huge project that they put a lot of time into, because again, it's not just the one that goes on the horse, but all around the track, everywhere there are roses.
And what time is that? Is that today?
Yeah, it's at 5:57.
5:57. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. That's a big hoopla. I remember I went to a party once, a couple parties, and they always have the mint julep and the hats. All the ladies wearing hats and the guys wearing jackets.
It's very festive.
Yeah, it's fun.
This is the 150th edition of the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah. Wow.
It's the longest continuously running sporting event in America, and there has not been one year in the 150 that it didn't run.
Yeah.
A couple times it ran not on the first Saturday in May due to World War II and COVID. Those are the only two times. Otherwise, every first Saturday in May, Kentucky Derby, Louisville, Kentucky. So
yeah.
I was curious about the roses because I just enjoy seeing them, and I think there's more than 400 that go on the back of the horse who wins.
Okay.
Wow.
Roses, yeah.
Incredible.
All right, well, let's get to the phones. We will take our first caller. Holly, you are on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, I have two questions. First of all, I know we've got that cicada infestation coming. What do we do to protect plants? What do they eat? Anything they can get their hands on?
Right now, they're, in fact, this is going to be a big breaking news story. We'll talk about it a little bit later, but they are.
Oh well, I can listen to it later.
No, it's fine. We're gonna. You don't need to do anything because they're essentially harmless. The only time it would harm something if it's a very young tree and you're concerned about every little twig on the tree, maybe. But no, they spend like 13 or 17 years underground, and they sip on the roots of trees. They nibble on them, get some juice, and they have a cicadic rhythm that they follow just based on what food nutrients are in that sap. And then the exudates are coming out of the roots.
So our plants
You don't need to do anything. Don't even worry about it. But yeah. Yeah, don't worry.
That's good. I was going to go out and buy a ton of spray or whatever I had to get.
No, there's. I saw an article that says, here's the top things you need to do, and I made fun of them, I think, a couple weeks ago. Put aluminum foil around the trunk. Yeah, whatever. You know, you got your big trees. All your aluminum foils go short edge. You can have family members pick off the cicadas. Well, that's not going to happen. So, and if it does, the females go up and they inject their eggs into the twig, it will fall off and go to the ground, but it's just like pruning. So don't worry about it.
Okay, okay. Next question is, I have a major problem with the forsythia. It's about 20 years old, and last year I didn't take care of it like I should have, like cutting it after the blooms. And one day I walked out, and it was touching the ground. It almost looked like it was going to break off in the center. And I had my guy come out, and he said, well, I can cut this back. He said, it looks like it's going to fall down if I don't, but you aren't going to have any blooms next year. So I said, okay, well, we got to do something for it because it's just almost laying on, the whole thing's laying on the ground. This thing's about 7 feet tall. And so he cut it back very generously, and this year it came back, not too many blooms, but it's doing the same thing again. I guess I haven't been very attentive, except I looked over my patio fence, and I thought, that thing's shrinking out there. Well, I went out, and it's doing the same thing it did last year. It's the part of the forsythia is laying on the ground.
What's your question? What you should do about it?
What can I do? What should I do?
So you say it's about 20 years old?
Yes.
Is it the outer branches, or is it from the center?
No, it's the outer thing. It's just going crazy with all this rain.
Yeah. The rain's definitely playing a role. It sounds like, you know, possibly maybe there's something going on in the soil. That's usually the first place you want to check with things. So I've seen some information where it's possible that maybe voles can get to the roots of things like forsythia and lilacs and things like that. But as a general rule, forsythia are pretty bulletproof. There's not a lot of issues. Now, they do naturally arch over, but it sounds to me from what you're saying that this is kind of unusual for yours.
Center, because it's so darn heavy. I mean, I lifted some of the branches up, and I thought, well, maybe I could tie the darn thing up, but you can't tie this thing up. It's too big.
I think what Jerry's saying is just have some patience, and thanks for your call.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you, Jerry, for answering Holly's question. We are going to continue with the questions on the Garden Hotline. That's 314-436-7900. Back in a moment.
Local insights, breaking news. KMOX, the news station dedicated to St. Louis and the region.
We are back on the Garden Hotline. I'm Scott Jagow, joined by Jerry Pence and Steve Millett today, who are answering your questions about gardening and plants and trees and flowers and cicadas, because this is cicada time coming. Steve, what's going on? What's the latest?
Breaking news. We got more breaking news with cicadas. Last time we talked about cicadas coming out of the soil. Now we're talking about the nymphs opening up and the adults popping out. This happened yesterday. I had some video I shared on X. Go to @HotlineGarden or just search for Garden Hotline. You'll see a nine-second video of an adult emerging from a nymph. And it's going to be on KSTK. Is going to break the news on Monday. And you please listen for watch it. And then my friend Jay is going to tell a story about cicadas and everything. And you can follow this whole cicada story on the Cicada Safari app. And if you want to learn more, they're almost alien-like. But here, this is a CBS story, Zombie Cicadas. The title is Hypersexual Zombie Cicadas Are Infected with a Sexually Transmitted Disease. They Will Emerge.
And zombie?
Apparently they're infected with this sexually transmitted fungus. It makes them hypersexual. And both broods can have it, you know, the ones in Illinois and the ones in Missouri. And the fungus causes, what happens is it's a fungus called Massospora cicadina. And the fungus grows on them, and it causes their genitals to fall off. And in place of the genitals, a chalky white plug erupts in its place. And once this happened, they're like crazed sex fiends. The infected males, they can even pretend to be females to get some sort of interaction going, and that sort of spreads it around. The fungus causes like an amphetamine-like chemical, causing them to be very randy. I'm not talking about the pronoun. I'm talking about the Scottish term, randy. And the fungus becomes it's actually like a puppet master of the infected cicada to propagate that fungal population. And they estimate maybe 5% of the population this year will be infected. And it's kind of like that Last of Us video game that went into a series on HBO Max, The Last of Us. It's kind of like that, the cordyceps that comes up the soil and infects humans and makes them zombies. But scientists are pleading. Remember I told you about wanted to talk about a cicada chocolate recipe? We're not going to do that because cicadas are bad now to eat. So scientists are pleading, please, please do not eat cicadas, okay?
Wasn't planning on it.
Okay. Well, that's good.
So, I mean, after that description you just gave, I don't want to be anywhere around them.
Yeah, yeah.
But is this a problem for people? It's just
they are worried about it. Yes, going across to animals, to raccoons who eat these things, and moles, birds, whatever. So they are kind of worried about it. Some of these scientists are saying don't eat them, and let's just don't even go there. So don't eat cicadas. I know how juicy they may look to some people, but.
No, they do not look juicy to me. I don't even know what they... Well, I mean, you don't really see them as much as you hear them.
Yeah.
When do we start hearing them?
Well, actually, I had a couple cups of cicadas that Jay needed for the show on KSDK, so I gave them to him. And in the truck, I didn't have the AC on, and they started perking up because they're, you know, they were cold blooded. They need heat. So they were perking up and flying around, and they started to do their little, the males did. And they were bigger, the adults. And then, I'm like, oh, I don't want them to get all spazzy. So I turned the AC on and cooled them down, and they just shut down right away. So they are temperature dependent, and you can see them crawling on trees. I caught mine off the back of houses, on the basement walls. They're just everywhere right now. So Kirkwood seems to be a hot spot. And you know what? KMOX stands for Kirkwood, Missouri. So if anybody has cicadas in Kirkwood, call us up. Let us know.
All right. Well, let's go to the phones. We have Steve on the Garden Hotline. You're up next. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I'm Steve. Hi, Steve. And I wanted to just say, years ago, I took classes from Jerry Pence.
Hey.
And he was a wonderful instructor. One of my favorites up there at Merrimack.
All right, Steve.
Learned a lot of great stuff from him. So when I was out in Merrimack in the Hort program, I never took turf class, and I got a turf question today. I've got a small little, live down in Soulard, and I got a small little patch of grass along the side of my house on the street. And last year I started to notice that it was getting a little bit of powdery mildew, and I'm just, you know, growing cool seed grasses out there. And this year it's come back again, and it's spread, and, you know, I'm not a turf guy. I don't know what I should be doing to deal with this powdery mildew.
Okay, I can help you
out there. That's my question.
This is Steve. It's probably in a shaded area. Kentucky bluegrass does very well in full sun. And when you put it in shaded area, like next to the house, it gets shaded. It doesn't get enough sun. And so that's what's happening. And it's usually a weak pathogen. It's a fungus that grows in the leaves, and the leaves are pretty much senescing. It's not getting enough sun. So that's what's happening. You may want to go with a more shade-tolerant grass over there. Try like a fine fescue mix. I think G.R. Robinson has some good seeds for that. It's the Glenn's shady mix you can get. Do really well in the shade. So go with that.
Okay. Well, so here's the deal. I've got a shade mix in there now. I know that. It's primarily fescue. And it gets a strong morning sun. Okay. And the patch of the grass is doing, it's flourishing, because I, you know, fertilize and I water and I do all that other stuff, but haven't had to do any of that this year, but just want to make sure that it's a little unsightly, and, I don't want it to further damage the grass. So what's the treatment option?
Nothing you can do about it. Just let that Kentucky bluegrass, it's in that tall fescue sod mix or whatever that you had in there. I'll let it die out. It just needs more sun. There's nothing you can really do about it. I wouldn't suggest spraying it. Not at all. Just mow it high and let the ecology take over, and the fescues that are there will take over.
All right. We appreciate the phone call. Let's go to Gary. You are next on the Garden Hotline.
Hi. Like the show. Hey, I have a question. My azalea bush did not bloom this year. Only had like 5, 6, 10, 20 blooms on it. It's profusely green and it looks all normal. And I was just wondering if you know why it may not have bloomed.
Did you notice if it had any flower buds on it?
It only a few.
Hmm. Because normally
it's old.
Okay. Well, maybe a little rejuvenation pruning would help that. Let some light get into it, expose some of those dormant buds, and let them start to push out would be a good thing.
Is it good to prune now, or when should I prune it?
Yeah, now would be a good time to prune it. Yeah,
now would be a good time to prune it.
Yeah, but don't shear it across the top or anything. You need to get in there and really do some selective pruning. So you
can okay. Don't take my hedge trimmers like I do my other bushes and trim it. And I didn't do that. Like, I haven't done that. And I was thinking it's greening out. It's, and my neighbors have some beautiful, and it just never pushed bloom. So I was just curious.
You know, plants go through stages. Sometimes they bloom heavier than others. So it might just be an off year for it.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Like the show.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate the call. The Garden Hotline is 314-436-7900. Our guest, Steve Millett, plant and pest doctor, and Jerry Pence, program coordinator for the horticulture program at St. Louis Community College Merrimack campus. We'll be back with them in just a moment, so stay tuned. You are listening to the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow, joined by our two experts today, Steve Millett and Jerry Pence, answering your questions about plants and trees and whatever else you have on your mind. Let's go back to the phones. The number is 314-436-7900. Gloria, you are up next.
Yeah, how are you doing this morning?
Good, Gloria. How are you? Where are you calling from?
St. Louis, what I'm calling about these hydrangeas. Every time I plant them every year, they never comes back. Do you know what I'm doing for us? So this year, when I buy stuff, I'm just putting it, leaving it in the pots and wait till the fall to plant stuff.
Well, if you're, was your hydrangea, was it one of the blue flowering ones?
Yeah, they don't come back.
Yeah, that's a zone 6 plant, and we're still kind of having zone 5 winters here. So you can expect that to die back to the ground every year, and it'll come up from the ground. You may get blooms. You may not get blooms. They bloom on They bloom on old wood. So,
I know that.
Yeah, so
I bought the new one that's real big, and I'm trying to see what is a certain dirt I use, or I use peat moss sometimes, you know, and it's some kind of for them to come back. I know they die down.
You know, a good fertile soil, they like acidic soils if you want the blue flowers, consistent moisture. And I would plant them in the spring so they have a chance to develop their root system to make it through the summer. If you're planting them late in the fall, that could be part of the reason that you're losing them.
Is there any hydrangea that she should look for? Is it the zone? She wants to be the zone.
Yeah, the hydrangea arborescens, which is the smooth hydrangea, that's native to Missouri, and that's a lot hardier. The hydrangea paniculata, the panicle hydrangea, is also much hardier.
Yeah, and you need to look at the label that's on the plant, and you need to look for a zone. You said 5, or
The macrophylla, the one she has, is a zone 6 plant. So you want to go zone 5 or lower.
Yeah, look for a zone 5 on the label. Okay, and ask the garden center rep to help you out. You want one that's 4-hour zone.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for your question. Good one. Explain what these zones are.
So there's cold hardiness zones that are set by USDA. And we've transitioned into a zone 6. So it means we're getting warmer, and it has to do with average days of cold temperatures. And we've been zone 5 for a really long time. We jumped into zone 6. There are some maps now that are even showing us bordering on zone 7, actually. So it's moving fast. And that all has to do with the cold hardiness of your plants, how they're going to survive the summer. The winter.
Well, is that an annual thing, or is this permanent? We're in a permanent zone 6 or 7 or
Well,
whatever.
It's all related to climate change.
Yeah,
so we've been zone 5 forever. It probably won't change annually, but
you just told her to look for zone 5.
Right.
Why?
Because we're still having zone 5 winters. We were in the minus numbers for at least a week last winter. That will pretty much kill back any zone 6 plant down to its root system. So they'll be root hardy, but they won't be top hardy.
So you should plan it's based on what the winter is like.
Yeah.
Okay.
There is a heat map zone as well. Not as many people follow that. You don't see that on plant tags as much.
Hmm. But yeah. it is available on the plant.
It
tags.
Is. Yeah.
And there's also a drought map that I tend to look at a lot too, because moisture, soil moisture, has a lot to do with it too. Yeah. So there's all these plant maps that you can Google and reference, and it's just fascinating how it changes.
We're in a funny zone. We're in a transition zone. We get cold winters, but then we get really, really hot summers, and that's really tough on some plants as well.
Okay, good to know. Let's continue with the phone calls. Sue, you are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. I have a question, a cicada question for you.
Yeah.
We recently, within the last month, planted a new dogwood tree, and we've heard that the cicadas can be damaging to young plants. Do we need to worry about that or put some garden netting or something like that on the tree?
Yeah, you know, my opinion would be just let it go. If it's a young plant, yeah, you lose a couple twigs, but it's just like pruning. I mean, and from my perspective, you buy a plant, you can stick it in the ground, you feed it, get it properly prepared, soil prep, and water it, and fertilize it, and just let it go. And if there's some knocks that it gets on the way for growth, then that's fine. But other people may want to protect it. I mean, if you want to go out there, if it's only like 4 or 5 feet tall, how tall is it?
It's about 5 feet.
5 feet. You could go out there and just look at it, you know, and then if you see cicada, just pick it off. Flick it off with
I'll
your finger.
Somebody else pick them off.
Or you just get some rubber gloves or some garden gloves. They'll make a deal. You know, they'll go away. But yeah, they're not going to do much damage. Not at all.
You can shoot them with a hose, too, and knock them off.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, I'll do that. That sounds great. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you, Sue. We appreciate it. 314-436-7900. The next caller is Carson. You are on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for stepping up and filling in for our hero, Mike Miller. Appreciate you guys being here. My question is liriope. About 4 years ago, we planted some liriope in a bed, totaling, a couple of beds, totaling about 3 feet deep and about 30 feet wide. So my concern about this is that we thought we were planting the spreading kind, and Mike Miller always talked about the spreading kind versus the clumping kind. So now I'm thinking maybe we got the clumping kind. So how long, if it is a spreading kind, how long before it would fill in and cover the entire bed? We're still having a lot of big gaps. It looks like just individual plants.
How long ago did you plant
it? Just a little bit. 4 years, and I think we planted them maybe 12 to 16 inches apart.
Okay. If it was a spreading kind, it would already, your bed would be totally full. So
That's what I was afraid of.
Yeah, the more clumping is going to take a while. It only spreads about, you know, maybe a half inch or so a year.
That's what it looks like it's doing. Okay, yeah. It's called the liriope, I don't know how to pronounce it, muscari.
Yep, that's the one you have.
That's the clumping kind.
Yeah, it's the clumping kind. The spreader is spicata.
Spicata. Okay, I'm going to look. Now, would it be advisable or not advisable if I was to find some of the picata kind and mix it in with the muscari?
Well,
would they do well together or keep them separate?
They'd be fine together. It's kind of a personal preference. There's also some, you know, native sedges that you could put in there as opposed to the spicata, which is a pretty aggressive plant. The sedges are a little better behaved.
The sedges. Okay, native sedges. Yeah, I like the idea of native and what you're talking about, what's going on at Merrimack and the native things really taking off.
Yeah. Yeah, give some sedges a try.
I'll look for some of those, and maybe mix in a little bit here and there. Give it a varied look.
And how can you identify, besides a label? I mean
they, sedges?
They have some plant characteristics that are different?
It's a much narrower leaf blade. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a smaller plant when you buy it.
And then the triangular stem?
Triangular stem on the flower stem.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, interesting question. Thanks for the call, Carson. 314-436-7900. We have Jerry Pence, the program coordinator for the horticulture program at St. Louis Community College. We have Dr. Steve Millett, plant and pest expert, answering your questions this morning. We will be right back on the Garden Hotline.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thanks for tuning in. Our experts today filling in for Mike are Jerry Pence and Steve Millett, answering your questions at 314-436-7900. Up next on the Garden Hotline is Glenn. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. My question is for Jerry. Is there any chance that I can stir up some interest from any of your students that might be interested in doing part-time work, gardening maintenance, or even gardening design?
Well, I'm glad you asked this question because we get it a lot. I'm not, via college rules, I cannot give student names out to anybody for any kind of work like that. I can give you the name, though, of graduates who have gone on to start their own businesses. So if you want to email me, I'd be happy to pass some of those names on to you.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Good question. Let's go to Linda. You're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, good morning. I just have a question because I didn't hear the whole conversation about the aluminum foil on the tree trunks. Yeah. I have a Japanese maple, a full-size maple, and a sweet gum tree. Oh, well, I also have a redbud tree that's still kind of small or young, mm-hmm. with a, probably only about a 2 or 3 inch tree trunk.
Yeah, how old is it? How old are these trees? Are they, and how?
Oh, the I don't know. The sweet gum and the full-size maple are pretty. They're probably 20 years old, if not more.
Okay. Yeah, those big ones aren't going to be affected, but don't even worry about that.
I was just wondering.
All those tactics are for smaller trees, but you want to pamper them, and they're only like 5 feet.
Okay. I also have, it's supposed to come tomorrow, some tulle fabric, you know, like netting. Do you think that we should use that?
In my opinion, no. It's a waste of time, waste of money. No, I wouldn't say. But someone may. Jerry, you want to take that?
Well, you know, I guess it depends on how attached you are to your tree. But a 20-foot tall tree, you know, they're going to be so high up in the tree because they're only going to go after young growth. So you'd have to have a pretty big net to cover that size tree. It's probably not worth it. You probably won't have any more dieback than you do in a normal winter when you get some tip dieback.
I wasn't really talking about, the full-size trees. I wasn't going to attempt anything with those. I'd probably break my neck. But no, the smaller trees are maybe only 10 or 12 feet tall. We keep them trimmed down pretty good because one is right next to our house, the Japanese maple. So, I mean, it wouldn't hurt to drape those with the tulle, would it?
No, wouldn't hurt. If you want to do it, go for it.
Yeah, I've seen, we have a vegetable garden and I have pretty good size plants growing out there already, potatoes and some Swiss chard and stuff. Huh. And I saw some cicada holes in the ground.
Yeah, they won't bother your vegetables.
Oh, good. So we don't have to cover like...
No, they're going after trees.
Oh, trees mostly. Yeah. Okay, so I think I might just use the tool on, you know, those two little trees since mm-hmm. I got it anyway. It was cheap enough on Amazon, $12, $15. Yeah.
Okay.
Big deal.
Well, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Linda. We appreciate it. Jim, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Yeah, thanks. I have a couple burning bushes that I didn't trim back last year. They're 20 years old. They've gotten to be about 8 feet in height, maybe 6 feet in diameter. So they're pretty big. I really need to cut them back. They've already had their early spring growth, and I was just wondering, how much can I cut those back and still have them be healthy?
You can cut those back pretty hard. They're pretty resilient. They can take a pretty good heavy pruning.
Okay. That's perfect. Thanks so much.
All right.
Thank you. Next up on the Garden Hotline is Mary. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
Hi, Mary.
I have a question for Jerry regarding Missouri wildflowers. My question is, does a particular plant grow in Missouri, and I'm referring to what they called fireweed in Alaska, where I saw clumps and clumps of these beautiful flowering things that looked like phlox panicula, purple, same color. I wondered if those grow in Missouri. And I'd like to know the Latin, if you know the Latin name of the Alaskan Wow, I'd love to hear it.
I was going to ask you that question, what the Latin name was.
Is fireweed?
Yeah, fireweed.
Have you been
to
Alaska?
There's so many fireweeds. Everybody has probably a fireweed.
Yeah.
So it looks like it's not native to Missouri, but it is native to Illinois. So,
oh, really?
You might be able to have some success with it.
Well, then I will say I think I have, because I've had several of these flowers come up, which I thought were maybe somehow phlox. I've had phlox way back in the past that didn't do well. So that's fine. I may have some.
There you go.
And the other thing is when in southeast Missouri, at the creek where we used to go swimming, in the cornfield next to it, we'd go in there to get rid of our wetsuits, and there were gobs of these, what I thought were phlox there. So
probably was phlox.
I don't know, to have come up from flooded creek, whatever.
Well,
I don't know.
There's a woodland phlox that will grow in shaded areas, especially where they're next to water.
We're talking about the tall panicula type?
No, it's a shorter one.
No, I know of the smaller one. No, these are tall panicula types. Okay, well, you've answered my question.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Mary. She's speaking your language over there.
There you go.
What exactly is fireweed? How do you describe it?
Well, she had a pretty good description. It looks sort of like a tall phlox. It's a perennial and has a kind of a reddish purple.
Oh, yeah. Phlox. Of course, we've seen those.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are beautiful.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we will continue your phone calls. We have a couple numbers you can choose, 314-436-7900. Or you can call our 1-800, you got to dial the 1-800-925-1120. Jerry Pence, the program coordinator for the horticulture program at St. Louis Community College, Merrimack Campus, is joining us, as well as Dr. Steve Millett, plant and pest doctor, answering your questions throughout the morning. We appreciate your phone calls, and we'll get to more of them after a break.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
We are back. Our experts today are Dr. Steve Millett and also Jerry Pence. He's the program coordinator for the horticulture program at St. Louis Community College, Merrimack Campus. We are taking your phone calls. The number to reach us is 314-436-7900. Jerry, you were saying that you're doing a tree walk today.
Yeah, there's a tree walk on campus led by Joe Anger, who's our lead horticulturist, started about 5 minutes ago.
Oh, it just started.
Yeah.
We're not going to catch it.
Yeah.
What exactly is a tree walk?
Well, so we have a lot of really nice older trees on campus. We actually manage 10 acres on campus. We have what we call the garden classroom, which is an outdoor lab for our students. So it'll be walking around there and walking around the entire campus, looking at some of the older trees, telling a few stories about those trees and their survival traits and so forth.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting to learn about trees in general. We were just talking off air about redwood trees and huge trees.
Right, right.
I mean, they're just incredible. I was at the Redwood National Forest and took a photo and I put it on Instagram, and it was just me being this tiny ant compared to this massive tree. It's just incredible how big they can get. But we were also saying that there's a limit on how tall trees can get, right, Steve?
Yeah, and it's all based on the water molecule tension. They pull that, they wick that up, so you get evaporation at the top of the tree, and that wicks it up, so the water gets evaporated out. It pulls more molecules up from the roots. But there's a limit. It can only be like, I think it was, 300 feet?
390 feet, you said.
Yeah. And once it reaches that, the gravity overtakes that tension between the water molecules, and it doesn't work. So that's why the trees are always limited to like 390 feet.
Only 390 feet tall.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it?
I mean, when you're in the forest and you're looking up at the trees, you can't see the top of them.
Yeah.
They're so tall, and you would break your neck trying to get. But they're also so wide. Around the circumference is incredible. And the weight of them.
Yeah.
It is just massive.
Yeah.
They're remarkable things on the earth. Let's get to the phone calls. Ken, you are on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ken.
Couple of questions. So I have a Yoshino cherry tree, the small one. It's a couple years old. And it's got about a 5-foot trunk. And at that point, you know, it's got plenty of branches heading out different directions. But the tallest one, it just keeps growing and veers off to the north. Curious if I should cut that near the trunk, or if I should do anything with it, or if there's a way I can straighten it up, or what I need to do with that.
You just have one renegade branch?
Yeah.
I don't know that I'd cut it all the way back to the trunk, because you're going to end up with a pretty big wound at that point. And this time of year, you don't want to be doing a lot of pruning, because there's a lot of vectoring insects out there that'll sense that stress on the tree. So, you know, you could cut it back a little bit, but I don't think I'd go more than a third.
Okay. Okay. Secondly, I think it's called like a petite knockout rose. Mm-hmm. Let's see. It's petite. Yeah. Rosa petite knockout tree. It's just like a small bush. It didn't come back real well. There's maybe a fourth of it greened up, and the rest looks like it's dead. I'm assuming it's okay to prune all the dead stuff off?
Yep, go ahead and take the dead out. You can always prune deadwood any time of year.
Okay, great. And the last question is, even on the Yoshino and a lot of other broadleaf type of plants I have, I'm seeing a lot of holes in them already. I'm assuming it's the insects getting at them.
Most likely.
Sprayed to use.
I wouldn't spray. And insects are good. Insects are good for birds. They're not going to devastate your tree.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for your help.
You bet.
Thank you for the call, Ken. Let's move on to Greg. You are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hello. Good morning. Thanks for filling in. I have a question about a holly bush. I moved in about 5 years ago. It was already pretty mature. Good size, 7 feet tall and wide, and it's always been very dense and robust. And this past winter, just all the foliage for the first time seems to have just fallen off, you know, like shriveled up brown. And it started to bounce back late this spring, but in kind of in patches, and it's got a lot of the just inactive old growth. And just wanted to get your opinion on it. Actually seems like to be a hybrid because it's got different, I guess, styles of leaves, like two different kinds. And in your experience with holly bushes, is there a right approach just to extend its life from something that it looks like it went through a lot of stress?
Yeah, it was a rough winter for broadleaf evergreens. It was dry and it was cold. You want to make sure that those broadleaf evergreens are going into the winter with really adequate moisture. So it's really important to start watering in the fall when, you know, we used to have pretty nice wet falls. Now they're really dry. So keep them watered going in. Right now, what I would do is just prune out what's not looking good and give it a chance. Let some light get in there. Maybe you'll expose some dormant buds and it'll start pushing some new growth for you.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I do kind of see some new growth occurring on the inside. So I'll certainly trim it back and give it the best chance and stay on top of watering definitely in fall, you say, right?
Yep.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
You bet.
All right. Thank you for the call. We will continue at 314-436-7900 with Peggy. You are the next caller on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning, Peggy.
Good morning. I have two questions for you. One is a vegetable question. I have had problems with the little white moth getting in and laying a worm in my zucchini. And I was wondering, I have covered it, but it doesn't seem to help to use bird nest, and tulle is too small for the bees. Should I just, what should I do? I tried my kitchen strainer, but.
So you're wanting to protect your
zucchini
from the caterpillars and the moth, for the caterpillars. You want to protect the bees,
It lays
right?
an egg, yeah, and it gets a worm or something inside of it. Mm-hmm. Chip Tynan made me dissect it once. I used to live across the street from him.
I love Chip, yeah.
Yeah, he'd be great.
Yeah.
And so there's this big worm that grows in there, and then the zucchini dies. So yeah. I'm just trying to protect it, but I'm not having good luck with the netting and stuff. I got one last year with the netting.
Yeah.
With the bird.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, your options are pesticides, insecticides, and you got to do those weekly. And if you're protective of bees, I wouldn't do it. I would just choose another alternative, a vegetable crop. You can still plant cucumbers right now. They're pretty tolerant of insects. So go ahead and get yourself like a Burpee 8 or something like that. And some
I got something long. I got 6 or 8 cucumbers in, and we'll just do those. And actually, I think the zucchini might be a cucumber. I think it was mismarked because it doesn't look like anyone I've ever had. Okay, so here's my second question. I have a beautiful group of boxwoods in the front. They have bright green growth. I don't think this would be the time to trim them. When would be the time?
When would be the time? Jerry?
You can prune them now. Your cutoff date for pruning boxwoods is about July, end of July. You don't want to cut them after end of July. So any time between now and then is fine.
Okay, I'll start working on them then. Thank you very much for your time.
So, Jerry, what happens when you do cut it off?
Well, they get new growth, and oftentimes it doesn't have time to harden off before winter, and then you get a lot of winter burn.
Okay, that makes sense. Excellent.
All right. Well, we are on a roll right now. The Garden Hotline will continue in a moment with Jerry Pence from the St. Louis Community College Horticulture Program and Dr. Steve Millett. Stay tuned. It is the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
KMOX, where every crack of the bat resonates with tradition, passion, and the spirit of Cardinals Nation.
We are back on the Garden Hotline. No rain in sight right now, but we could have some later on today and over the next few days. We're the Garden Hotline. I'm Scott Jagow. Mike Miller is still on the mend. We wish him the best. And he does have a, what do you call it? GoFundMe. Thank you. A GoFundMe page to help pay his medical bills. Tracy was on last week, his wife, describing the situation. It's not very good, but we're keeping a positive attitude, and he is, and she is, and so we're thinking about you, Mike, and if you can donate a little bit of money to help out, there is a GoFundMe page called Mike's Epilepsy. Joining us right now is Jerry Pence from St. Louis Community College and Steve Millett, answering your questions at 314-436-7900. Let's see who's next. Roger, you are on the Garden Hotline.
Yeah, I've got an unusual question. I've got a willow oak about 10, 15 years old, maybe 15 feet tall, 4-inch caliper, and I got a deer problem. And I was wondering, and I'm serious, I'm wondering if pouring urine around the base of the tree would prevent the deer from getting close to it, and if it might hurt the tree.
So, are you talking about just going to going out and providing the urine around the tree? I'd be concerned about that.
Pouring a jar or a pitcher full or whatever.
I don't know. That would smell awful. I was at a customer's house the other day, and he was putting out some of the deer and rabbit repellent. Oh, it's made of egg solids and like vinegar. I don't know. It's awful, and it's got thyme on it. That thyme really did a great job masking the odor. I'm being sarcastic there. It was awful. I was working in the shrubs, and he was spraying that stuff, and oh, man, it gagged me. And he told me a little piece of advice is you have to train the deer not to come. You just can't put it out once. You got to keep putting it out so that they know they'll have some sort of physical memory of not to go to that place because it smells awful.
Would it hurt the tree at all, do you think, the roots?
The urine, well, it has urea in it, which is a very strong fertilizer, and it will burn, yes. So you get put too much urine down. You see spots in neighbors' yards that maybe have a female dog. Female dogs, they're squatters, so they'll squat in one place and urinate there. And the center of that urine patch is going to bleach it out. It's going to kill them. And then on the outer ring will be dark green, which is where the nitrogen that didn't burn it. It will burn. Yes. Yeah, so I would be very careful about that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The things that we talk about on this show sometimes shock me. Peeing on trees. And last week it was, or not last hour, it was Randy Cicadas.
Yes, Randy. Randy.
The cicadas with high sex drives. And don't eat the cicadas.
Yeah, don't eat. Go figure that one out. Yeah.
Okay, let's continue with a phone call. See what's next. What are they going to bring next? Diane, you're up.
Hello.
You're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, Diane. Good morning. What's your question?
Hi. Thank you. I moved into a and my house, there are 20 red cedar trees planted in a small amount of space. They're about 4 feet tall and almost touch each other side to side.
Yeah.
I know a friend who would dig them up, but is it too late to do that? Don't you need to do that in the spring or the fall?
Fall is probably your best time.
And so do you think it's too late to do it now?
Yes. Jerry,
okay.
I agree. Yep, I wouldn't do it now.
Okay, and what kind of hints can you give me for when it's done? Like
fall, cooler temperatures.
I would say, then, you know, October, November is when I would move it.
Okay, and then to move them, we just need to dig a big ball around it, right?
Yep, you're going to dig a big ball, capture as much of that root system as you can without damaging it.
And then just water it a lot after he plants it?
Yep.
And just make sure you give them enough space between them, because those where their branches are touching, they're too close, those leaves are going to, or those needles are going to, we're going to die, essentially, and it'll look awful. So make sure you give them enough space.
Right.
Think about how they're going to, what's their girth and their height and everything.
Okay. Yeah, because there's way too many in this space now.
Well, there
you go. Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for the question. Clara, you are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Oh, good morning. I have a question about tomatoes. I recently purchased a cherry tomato, and it has a cluster of tomatoes on it, plus blossoms. So I'm wondering if I should pinch those off to make the plant stronger for later in the season, or should I let them go ahead and...
If it were me, I would say, yeah. I know garden centers, we like to put... Well, I worked at garden centers many times. We like to put the ones that had fruit on, the ones that had color... But those were the ones that, you know, the flowers would, you know, if you had a chrysanthemum out there, those are the curb appeal to bring people in. And yeah. I would always go for the ones that didn't have flowers for the mums. And the ones that didn't have tomato cherries or the tomatoes on the plant or the flowers. I wanted to get very vegetative. So, yeah, I would pinch those off. So, but it's just an art, and it's up to your personal preference.
Okay. It doesn't really do that much.
Not really, no.
Okay. And also, my daughter has beautiful hostas, or she had beautiful hostas. They cut down a huge tree that had the disease in it, and that was shading the hostas. Mm-hmm. So consequently, the hostas have all been sunburned this last week when we had the real hot day. Is there any way, can she trim those plants back and replant them someplace in the shade? Will they... survive?
Yep, she can certainly do that, but you're going to need to move them to the shade or they'll just keep getting sunburned.
I mean, so should she cut all the leaves off, those burnt leaves?
Yeah, it'll probably send some new growth up.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Clara. We will go next on the Garden Hotline, which is 314-436-7900 to Jim. You're up next.
Hello,
Jim.
Hi, Jim. Good morning. What's your question?
I've got two questions. One, I have a blue atlas that, curves and, able to shape it. But I had the deer that came up and, used its antlers to scrape its scent. And so it killed a portion of it. And I've had some new growth on the top of that, but it hasn't really responded real well. Is there something that I could do to help get the growth going stronger? I assume I just leave the other damaged part alone.
Well, you can take out any dead. Anything that's dead, just go ahead and remove it. As far as growth goes, Blue Atlas cedars grow extremely slow. So you're just going to have to be patient and let it recover.
Okay.
Keep it good and moist. It does not like drought. So as we get further into summer, you're going to want to make sure you keep it nice and consistently moist.
Great. Well, one other question. I have zebra grass that has, you know, grown extremely large and was looking to split them and then, you know, replant in another location part of it. Is now a good time or is it too late?
Well,
they've already grown about a foot.
Yeah, you're like right on the edge. The best time to do that is right before they start leafing out. But if you have to move them, I'd go ahead and do it. And again, just keep them watered, mulch them in, and they might do fine for you.
Okay. And do you need to dig quite a bit of outside the root?
They have a very extensive, thick root system. You're going to have to go fairly deep. And you won't have to go all that wide, but it's going to be tough. They're hard to split.
Okay. All right. Would it be better to wait until next spring or fall? Or
if it was mine, I would wait till next spring. Like, okay. Do it in March next year.
Got it. Okay. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Thank you for the call, Jim. Rebecca, you're up next on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning, Rebecca.
I wanted to get some advice on a gooseberry plant I have. It started out as a twig. Now it is about 5 foot in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fruiting now, so I'm just waiting till everything, I can harvest all that. When can I transplant that? Because it's actually in the garden, and I need the space for
You want to harvest the berries first? Right. You don't want to
transplant. Yeah, because there are. Yeah. No, not yet.
Yeah. So yeah. You make a mean gooseberry pie.
I make gooseberry pie. I make gooseberry jam. I love the jam. It's so good.
Now you planted that in my head. I'm going to have to go get some gooseberry pie.
We're at 1220 Olive. You can bring some of that down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd wait till, after you get all the fruit, harvested and then do it probably in the fall would be a good time to do it.
Okay,
Jerry, what are your thoughts?
Fall.
Yeah, you can do fall. I'm a big proponent of doing things early spring. I like them to develop a root system. And when you do it in the fall, our temperatures are starting to cool, the soil's starting to cool down, the roots are going to start to go a little bit dormant. So you're not going to get the extensive root growth that you would in the spring.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Okay.
Thanks, Rebecca. All right. We're going to take a short break and then we're going to come back and continue the questions for Jerry Pence from St. Louis Community College, Merrimack campus, and Dr. Steve Millett. It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX.
KMOX Day at the Ballpark is this coming Wednesday.
A swing, and there it goes!
Get your tickets now, and you'll receive a John Rooney, Ricky Horton audio bobblehead.
Yes! Home run number 700! Pujols!
KMOX Day at the Ballpark. Tickets on sale now and going fast at cardinals.com/theme.
This is the Garden Hotline on KMOX, the voice of St. Louis. I'm Scott Jagow, filling in as host. Our guests this morning are Jerry Pence from St. Louis Community College and Steve Millett, who has been on the program before. We are taking your questions, and man, we've been on a roll this morning. We've gotten through a lot of calls on this show, and they keep coming in, and I appreciate it because we like to answer your questions. 314-436-7900. Let's go next to Mike. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing good.
Good.
What's your question,
Mike? Good. I have a redbud tree that's probably 3, maybe 4 years old. It's planted I live in the city, between the sidewalk and the street. Mm-hmm. It's doing really well, but one of the lowest branch toward the sidewalk, people have to duck to go under. It's a pretty good sized branch. Is it okay to cut that off now, or should I wait till the fall?
Just cut it off now. You're teasing the neighbors.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, and it's not going to hurt the tree to do it now?
No, not that much. I mean, it's not like a big one, is it?
It's pretty good size.
How big a girth is it?
You mean like diameter?
Yeah.
Maybe 2 inches.
You're probably okay. It might bleed a little when you cut it. Red buds, when you cut them in the spring, tend to leak some water and sugars out. But how big is the branch that you're going to cut?
I'd say, I wish I was looking at it right now. It's got to be 5 foot.
I mean diameter.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. The diameter I gave you on the redbud, that was the branch, maybe 2 inches. The branch. The diameter of the redbud tree, man, I'm not sure. It's 4 inches, maybe. Yeah. It's good size.
Yeah, it's a pretty sizable branch you're going to cut. So there might be, you know, it might set it back a little bit. It's a little risky. If you can just cut off some of the small stuff to maybe lift it a little bit right now and then do your heavy pruning in the wintertime, that would be better.
Okay, so when you say winter, what month are you talking, November, December?
Anytime between November and March.
All right, thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you, Mike, for the call. Dave, you are up next on the Garden Hotline with Jerry and Steve.
Hey, good morning, Jerry and Steve.
Good morning.
I've got some horsetail that I planted when I used to have a pond, you know, a small pond, backyard pond, and it looked so nice in the water and a pot. I thought, I'll plant some in the ground. Well, you know what happened.
Yeah.
So is there any way a herbicide that will work on this or...
Yeah, you have to make sure it's labeled for your product. So this is an aquatic plant. Is it near water?
No, it's not anymore. It's just popping up. My pond's gone, and it's just popping up everywhere, you know.
Okay. Well, you just have to make sure it's on the label, but there are some herbicides that you can use that we'll get to that.
Okay.
Jerry, you got any ideas on that?
No, I would look up herbicides.
Yeah.
And see what
it's not a very common question.
No.
How to kill horsetail, you know, because usually you want to protect those because those are wetland plants and you don't want to mess with them. But if you're in the middle of your yard and there's no water.
Yeah, nothing like that anymore.
I would imagine they wouldn't last very long.
Is it a wet spot?
No, they just kind of pop up in the, you know, just here and there, and even in the cracks of the cement sometimes in the patio.
Yeah, they're survivors.
I can't believe it, you know, yeah. And one real quick, the tiger lilies. How about controlling them? Any ideas on that? The
bulbs?
They're kind of
like
evasive,
like the day lilies, the old fashioned.
They're pretty evasive. Yeah. Any way to control those or get rid of them, or other than digging them up?
Is it like a roadside kind of?
Oh no, it's in the backyard, like along a fence. About a 10-foot area.
Yeah, you could dig that out.
And,
Horsetail kind of the same way. If you know, if you don't want to use a chemical, you can dig them.
Okay,
off. Just kind of be persistent.
Yeah, you just make sure when you check, you can get these, the post-emergent systemic herbicides. But make sure it's on the label. Otherwise, you're going off label, and then that's not legal.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome.
Okay.
The phone number is 314-436-7900, and we have a little surprise coming up. We're going to do a quiz. Steve, you want to set this up?
Yes, let's do this. There's going to be a shortage of cucumbers this year, according to Fox Weather. The USDA has reduced its number of farmers that produce cucumbers, and that has declined, and mainly because Mexico is doing it so cheaply. They're coming to the U.S., millions of tons of cucumbers every year from Mexico. However, extreme weather in Mexico, it had a huge impact on the availability of cucumbers and especially, hence, pickles. So you need to stock up. I want everybody to go out today and I want you to stock up on pickles. You remember the toilet paper run we had in COVID? We are going to start the pickle run, okay? There's going to be a pickle run today. You're going to go into Schnucks tonight and you're not going to see any pickles on the shelf. So everybody, call people and tell them, well, you got to get your pickles, got to get your pickles. We'll cause a panic and people will buy pickles. Even Firehouse Subs has said that there's going to be a pickle shortage. So they're warning their franchisees people that, you know, there may be pickle shortage, so your sandwiches may not have pickles on them. NC State University, they're also warning about it. It's maybe in short supply. So what we want to do to help get cucumbers, get them up and growing again in the U.S., I am going to start this new thing. It's called the Botanic Quiz. And we're going to have the next caller. We got a caller up there?
No, we're going to do it after the break.
Do it after the break. So we're going to have a two-question quiz. And you're going to pair up with Jerry. And if you win, you get a chance at the first Botanic Garden Hotline prize contest winner. All right?
And that would be, are we going to tell him? Well,
let's wait.
Yeah. But, Jerry, you were telling me, or you were talking with us earlier, and you say you don't like cucumbers, but you like pickles.
That's correct, yes.
Why don't you like cucumbers?
There's just something about the taste of cucumbers.
Do they have a taste?
Do it for me.
Yeah.
They're pretty neutral.
Yeah, they're good.
Maybe that's it. I don't know.
I mean, cucumbers don't offend me, but I love pickles.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I love spicy pickles.
Okay.
There's a company called Pacific Pickle, and they make what's called, they called it the pandemic pickle. Because I guess they started making it and shipping it during the pandemic when no one was going anywhere. But anyway, a friend of mine had a jar, and he shared it with me, and they are really spicy, but so good.
Yeah.
But then I ordered some, and I forgot how spicy they were. So after eating one pickle, you know, you'll feel it. Half a pickle. But they're so delicious.
Yeah. I like my dill pickle and then the bread and butter, the sweet ones. My daughter doesn't like the sweet ones.
I don't either. I'm a dill guy.
On a nice ham sandwich with a big, thick slice of white onion and mustard. Oh, man, that's good.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we're going to do this contest quiz. The next caller who calls in will get a chance to answer the questions and get a prize. So it's 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline on KMOX.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
We are back. Jerry Pence from St. Louis Community College Horticulture Program and Steve Millett answering your questions. And we had a setup earlier. We're going to have a little contest now.
Two questions. Yeah, you get to win a set of some cucumber seeds.
Cucumber seeds because
we want to spread cucumbers.
That's right, because we're going to have a cucumber shortage, which means we're going to have a pickle shortage.
That's right.
All right. Well, Teresa, you are the lucky caller who gets to answer a couple of questions.
Now, you and Jerry are going to team up on this, okay? So you guys can talk about it. So Jerry said,
okay. Hi.
All right, here we go, Teresa.
Hi.
All right, your first question is, what is the genus of the cucumber?
I should have gone up to my classroom. I'm a teacher here. I just came over to work in my classroom. The genus of it. I need help from my partner here.
Okay, let's go with cucumis.
Cucumis, that sounds good.
That is correct. Oh, correct.
Yay! All right.
All right, the next question. The USDA estimates how many pounds of pickles do Americans eat per year? Is it A, 14 to 15 pounds? Is it B, 2 to 3 pounds? Or is it C, 8 to 9 pounds? What do you think? A low rate, a middle rate, and a high rate.
And that's in a year for each person?
Yeah. Either
okay.
2 to 3, 8 to 9, or 14 to 15.
And I wonder if this is knowingly eat them, because, you know, sometimes they come on the food, you don't know it. Hey, partner, I'm thinking C, but you help me with that.
I'll agree with you.
8 to 9, that is correct.
Oh.
Teresa, you're our first winner on the Botanic Quiz here on the Garden Hotline.
Well, I'm glad I did this, because I'm a science teacher, and my students have been growing plants. I have 152 students growing plants.
What high, so is it high home. School or?
Middle school, including cucumbers. We started a couple, but they're going to be taking home cucumber seeds this week to plant at home.
What's your school?
So I
got a shout
Columbia,
out to.
Okay, Columbia Middle School, Columbia, Illinois.
Oh,
awesome. Wow, awesome.
Great.
And now you have
a huge hallway that is all glass windows on two sides.
Okay.
And so they each get seeds. They choose some things of their choice, and they get a mystery seed, and they grow them, and they get to take them home.
Okay.
And I'm trying to promote gardening and all that with all my students. So
Good for you.
Well, you did very well. And if you hang on the phone.
Hang on.
Yeah, hang on the phone. Okay.
James is going to take your address down.
But in the meantime, did you have a question? Oh, she's gone. Did you have a question, Teresa, or were you just calling for the cucumber seeds?
Okay. I was calling for the cucumber seeds. I love listening to your show. You guys are awesome. You're wonderful.
So. All right. Thank you so much. Hang on, and we'll get you get those seeds to you. Okay. Well, that was fun. That was successful. And she got both of them right.
Yes. She's amazing.
It was a science teacher who called in who's planting things with her students.
Could have been better opportunity.
Good choice. All right. Well, let's go and continue with the phone calls at 314-436-7900. Tony, you are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hello?
Hi, Tony. What's your question?
Hey, listen, I know it's not one of those things and not in my backyard kind of thing, but I really love to see clover. Clover really enhances green in April, late March, April. It just makes everything green around it because it promotes nitrogen. I just want your thoughts on it.
Hey, if you're good with it, I think that's great. You know, it's good for pollinators. It's pretty aggressive, so you know you have to really be good with it, or it will, because it's probably going to take over a lot of your turf.
Does it kill itself after a while, though?
Does it kill itself?
Yeah, like in fall, start to die off, whatever. It just keeps going, huh?
Oh, it's a perennial weed, so it'll come back.
Okay. Yep. That's my question, but it really does make everything green, though.
They're good for bees too. Yep. So,
is that what it is?
Yeah, you're doing a great. You know, a clover honey is a very tasty honey, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you. You mentioned bees. Did you see the game? Bees.
Of course. Yeah, and it's a game of semantics because I saw one headline that says beekeeper saves the ball game, and I'm looking at the picture. He's up there with the B&G sprayer, which is what you use for spraying pesticides. And I'm like, he is wearing a bee suit, but he was not keeping those bees. He was killing them. So,
well, that's not what I heard. It said that they were sprayed and to keep them sedated or whatever. And then they were sucked into a vacuum and then they were released elsewhere.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so they use it to kind of calm them down. What's
the product?
It's just like a fog kind of a thing.
Like smoke?
Yeah, it smells like smoke. Yeah, maybe it is smoke. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and they put them in a vacuum, and then they take them out and release them in the wild.
And I heard he had a bad first pitch, though.
No, actually, it was pretty good. I mean, he got it over the plate, at least. He got it to the plate.
Okay.
Most of the people who do that don't get it to the plate. It bounces.
Well, that's a good story.
Yeah, it was. I mean, he was at his son's T-ball game. Mm-hmm. And they called him and said, we have thousands of bees on the netting above home plate. Can you come help? So it took him 30 minutes to get there. There was a 2-hour delay when all is said and done. And then the crowd went crazy. They were playing a song about heroes, and he got to throw out the first pitch. He enjoyed every second of it.
Yeah, that's good.
All right, Travis, you are on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Yeah, thank you. My question is, I have a row of viburnum in the back of our home that, it's a screen against our neighbor's garage. And the two viburnum that are on the right, on the east, to the east, have really full foliage. They bloom really good. But the further you get to the west, they get thinner and thinner. And we do have a beech tree that's close by, so the ones on the left have a lot of shade, which I suspect is why they don't get as much foliage. But is there anything I can do to sort of boost those so that, you know, it looks a little fuller, a little more uniform?
Probably not. Depending on what kind of viburnum it is, most viburnums are full sun plants, so that's your problem. So that gives you a good opportunity to get some diversity in there, maybe get some more shade-loving plants.
Okay. Okay, is there some these are pretty tall, so they're about 8 foot. I mean, is there something that takes a lot of shade that would get that high?
You know, you could start looking at things like spice bush, calycanthus, Carolina allspice. Those kinds of things would be good.
All right, Travis, good question, and we appreciate it. And it's been a very good show, guys.
Yes.
We even gave away some cucumber seeds.
Great, because
we don't want to run out of pickles.
That's right. Get your pickles, man.
That's right. Steve Millett, Jerry Pence. Guys, appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you,
Scott. You're awesome.
It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. So we'll talk to you next week.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
KMOX Day at the Ballpark is this coming Wednesday.
A swing, and there it goes!
Get your tickets now, and you'll receive a John Rooney, Ricky Horton audio bobblehead.
It's home run number 700! Pujols!
KMOX Day at the Ballpark. Tickets on sale now and going fast at cardinals.com/theme.
This is the Garden Hotline on Cam Wex, the voice of St. Louis. I'm Scott Jagow, filling in as host. Our guests this morning are Jerry Pence from St. Louis Community College and Steve Millett, who has been on the program before. We are taking your questions, and man, we've been on a roll this morning. We've gotten through a lot of calls on this show, and they keep coming in, and I appreciate it because we like to answer your questions. 314-436-7900. Let's go next to Mike. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing good.
Good.
What's your question, Mike?
Good. I have a redbud tree that's probably 3, maybe 4 years old. It's planted between, I live in the city, between the sidewalk and the street. Mm-hmm. It's doing really well, but one of the lowest branch toward the sidewalk, people have to duck to go under. It's a pretty good sized branch. Is it okay to cut that off now, or should I wait till the fall?
You just cut it off now. You're teasing okay. Neighbors.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, and it's not going to hurt the tree to do it now?
No, not that much. I mean, it's not like a big one, is it?
It's pretty good size.
How big a girth is it?
You mean like diameter?
Yeah.
Maybe 2 inches.
You're probably okay. It might bleed a little when you cut it. Red buds, when you cut them in the spring, tend to leak some water and sugars out. But how big is the branch that you're going to cut?
I'd say, I wish I was looking at it right now. I don't. It's got to be 5 foot.
I mean diameter.
Oh, yeah, that's what, I'm sorry. The diameter I gave you on the red bud, that was the branch, maybe 2 inches. The branch. The diameter of the red bud tree, man, I'm not sure. It's 4 inches, maybe. Yeah. It's pretty good size.
Yeah, it's a pretty sizable branch you're going to cut. So there might be, you know, it might set it back a little bit. It's a little risky. If you can just cut off some of the small stuff to maybe lift it a little bit right now and then do your heavy pruning in the wintertime, that would be better.
Okay, so when you say winter, what month are you talking, November, December?
Anytime between November and March.
All right, thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you, Mike, for Bye-bye. The call. Dave, you are up next on the Garden Hotline with Jerry and Steve.
Hey, good morning, Jerry and Steve.
Good morning.
I've got some horsetail that I planted when I used to have a pond, you know, a small pond, backyard pond, and it looked so nice in the water in a pot. I thought, I'll plant some in the ground. Well, you know what happened.
Yeah.
So is there any way, a herbicide that will work on this, or...
Yeah, you have to make sure it's labeled for your product. So this is an aquatic
okay.
plant. Is it near water?
No, it's not anymore. It's just popping up. My pond's gone, and it's just popping up everywhere, you know.
Okay. Well, you just have to make sure it's on the label, but there are some herbicides that you can use that we'll get to that.
Okay.
Jerry, you got any ideas on that?
No, I would look up herbicides
yeah.
and mm-hmm. see what...
It's not a very common... question.
No.
How to kill
right,
horsetail,
right,
you know, because
right,
usually yeah. you want to protect those because those are wetland plants and you don't uh-huh. want to mess with them. But
right.
if you're in the middle of your yard and there's no water.
Yeah, nothing like that anymore.
I would imagine they wouldn't last very long.
Is it a wet spot?
No, they just kind of pop up in the, you know,
yeah,
just here and there, and even in the cracks of the cement sometimes in the patio.
Yeah, they're survivors.
I can't believe it, you know, yeah. And one real quick, the tiger lilies. How about controlling them? Any ideas on that? The
The bulbs?
They're kind of
like
evasive.
Like the daylilies, the old-fashioned
daylilies. They're pretty evasive, yeah. Any way to control those or get rid of them, or other than digging them up? Yeah, I hear you.
I mean, is it like a roadside kind of?
Oh, no. It's in the backyard, like along a fence.
How big is it?
About a 10-foot area.
Yeah, you could dig that out.
And,
Horsetail kind of the same way. If you don't want to use a chemical,
yeah,
yeah,
you can dig them.
Okay.
Up. Just kind of be persistent.
Yeah, you just make sure when you check, you can get these, the post-emergent systemic herbicides, but make sure it's on the label. Otherwise, you're going off label, and then that's not legal.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome.
Okay.
The phone number is 314-436-7900, and we have a little surprise coming up. We're going to do a quiz. Steve, you want to set this up?
Yes. Let's do this. There's going to be a shortage of cucumbers this year, according to Fox Weather. The USDA has reduced its number of farmers that produce cucumbers, and that has declined, and because Mexico is doing it so cheaply, and they're coming to the U.S. millions of tons of cucumbers every year from Mexico. However, extreme weather in Mexico, it had a huge impact on the availability of cucumbers, and especially hence pickles. So you need to stock up. I want everybody to go out today, and I want you to stock up on pickles. You remember the toilet paper run we had in COVID? We are going to start the pickle run, okay? There's going to be a pickle run today. You're going to go into Schnucks tonight, and you're not going to see any pickles on the shelf. So everybody call people and tell them, well, you got to get your pickles, got to get your pickles. We'll cause a panic, and people will buy pickles. Even Firehouse Subs has said that there's going to be a pickle shortage, so they're warning their franchisees people that, there may be pickle shortage, so your sandwiches may not have pickles on them. NC State University, they're also warning about it. It's maybe in short supply. So what we want to do to help get cucumbers, get them up and growing again in the U.S., I am going to start this new thing. It's called the Botanic Quiz. And we're going to have the next caller. We got a caller up there?
No, we're going to do it after the break.
Do it after the break. So we're going to have a two-question quiz. And you're going to pair up with Jerry. And if you win, you get a chance at the first Botanic Garden Hotline prize contest winner. All right?
And that would be, are we going to tell him? Well, let's wait.
Yeah.
But, Jerry, you were telling me, or you were talking with us earlier, and you say you don't like cucumbers, but you like pickles.
That's correct, yes.
Why don't you like cucumbers?
There's just something about the taste of cucumbers.
Do they have a taste?
Do it for me.
Yeah.
They're pretty neutral.
Yeah, they're good.
Maybe that's it. I don't know.
I don't. Cucumbers don't offend me, but I love pickles.
Yeah. Oh yes,
I love spicy pickles.
Okay.
There's a company called Pacific Pickle, and they make what's called they called it the pandemic pickle. Because I guess they started making it and shipping it during the pandemic when no one was going anywhere. But anyway, a friend of mine had a jar and he shared it with me, and they are really spicy, but so good.
Yeah.
But then I ordered some, and I forgot how spicy they were. So after eating one pickle, you'll feel it. Half a pickle. But they're so delicious.
Yeah. I like my dill pickle and then the bread and butter, the sweet ones. My daughter doesn't like the sweet pickles.
I don't either. I'm a dill guy.
On a nice ham sandwich with a big, thick slice of white onion and mustard. Oh, man, that's good.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we're going to do this contest quiz. The next caller who calls in will get a chance to answer the questions and get a prize. So it's 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline on KMOX.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
We are back. Jerry Pence from St. Louis Community College Horticulture Program, and Steve Millett answering your questions. And we had a setup earlier. We're going to have a little contest now.
Two questions. Yeah, you get to win a set of some cucumber seeds.
Cucumber seeds, because
we want to spread cucumbers.
That's right, because we're going to have a cucumber shortage, which means we're going to have a pickle shortage.
That's right.
All right. Well, Teresa, you are the lucky caller who gets to answer a couple of questions.
Now, you and Jerry are going to team up on this, okay? So you guys can talk about it. So Jerry said
okay.
All right, here we go, Teresa.
Hi.
All right, your first question is, what is the genus of the cucumber?
I should have gone up to my classroom. I'm a teacher here. No. I just came over to work in my classroom. The genius of it. I need help from my partner here.
Okay, let's go with cucumis.
Cucumis, that sounds good.
That okay. is correct. Oh, correct. Correct.
Yay! All right.
All right. The next question. The USDA estimates how many pounds of pickles do Americans eat per year? Is it A, 14 to 15 pounds? Is it B, 2 to 3 pounds? Or is it C, 8 to 9 pounds? What do you think? A low rate, a middle rate, and a high rate.
And that's in a year for each person?
Yeah. Either
okay.
2 to 3, 8 to 9, or 14 to 15.
And I wonder if this is knowingly eat them, because, you know, sometimes they come on the food, you don't know it. Hey, partner, I'm thinking C, but you help me with that.
I'll agree with you.
8 to 9, that is correct.
Oh.
Teresa, you're our first winner on the botanic quiz here on the Garden Hotline.
Well, I'm glad I did this, because I'm a science teacher and my students have been growing plants. I have 152 students growing plants.
Is it high school or?
Middle school, including cucumbers. We started a couple, but they're going to be taking home cucumber seeds this week to plant at home.
What's your school?
Columbia Middle School, Columbia, Illinois.
Oh, awesome. Wow. Awesome.
Great.
And now
we have a huge hallway that is all glass windows on two sides.
Okay.
And so they each get seeds. They choose some things of their choice, and they get a mystery seed, and they grow them, and they get to take them home.
Okay.
And I'm trying to promote gardening and all that with all my students. So
Good for you. Good for you.
Well, you did very well. And
can we get your address on the phone?
Hang on the phone. Okay.
James is going to take your address down.
But in the meantime, did you have a question? Oh, she's gone. Did you have a question, Teresa, or were you just calling for the cucumber seeds?
Okay. I was calling for the cucumber seeds. I love listening to your show. You guys are awesome. You're wonderful.
So. All right. Thank you so much. Hang on, and we'll get those seeds to you. Okay. Well, that was fun. That was successful. And you got both of them right.
Yes. She's amazing.
It was a science teacher who called in, who's planting things with her students.
Could have been better opportunity.
Good choice. All right. Well, let's go and continue with the phone calls at 314-436-7900. Tony, you are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hello?
Hi, Tony. What's your question?
Hey, listen, I know it's not one of those things and not in my backyard kind of thing, but I really love to see clover. Clover really enhances green in April, late March, April. It just makes everything green around it because it promotes nitrogen. I just want your thoughts on it.
Hey, if you're good with it, I think that's great. You know, it's good for pollinators. It's pretty aggressive, so you know you have to really be good with it, or it will, because it's probably going to take over a lot of your turf.
Does it kill itself after a while, though?
Does it kill itself?
Yeah, like in fall, start to die off, whatever. It just keeps going, huh?
Oh, it's a perennial weed, so it'll come back.
Okay. Yep. That's my question, but it really does make everything green, though.
They're good for bees too.
Yep.
So
is that what it is?
Yeah, you're doing a great. A clover honey is a very tasty honey, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you. You mentioned bees. Did you see the game?
Yes, of course. Yeah, and it's a game of semantics, because I saw one headline that says beekeeper saves the ball game, and I'm looking at the picture. He's up there with the B&G sprayer, which is what you use for spraying pesticides. And I'm like, he is wearing a bee suit,
mm-hmm.
but he was not keeping those bees. He was killing them. So,
well, that's not what I heard. It said that they were sprayed and to keep them sedated or whatever. And then they were sucked into a vacuum, and then they were released elsewhere.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so they use it to kind of calm them down when they're working. It's just like a fog kind of a thing.
Like smoke?
Yeah, it smells like smoke. Yeah.
Maybe
it is smoke. I don't know.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and they put them in a vacuum, and then they take them out and
get out.
Release them in the wild.
And I heard he had a bad first pitch, though.
No, actually, it was pretty good.
Was it?
I mean, he got it over the plate, at least. He got it to the plate.
Okay.
Most of the people who do that don't get it to the plate. It bounces.
Well, that's a good story.
Yeah, it was. I mean, he was at his son's T-ball game.
Mm-hmm.
And they called him and said, yeah, we have thousands of bees on the netting above home plate. Can you come help? So it took him 30 minutes to get there. There was a 2-hour delay when all is said and done. And then the crowd went crazy. They were playing a song about heroes, and he got to throw out the first pitch. He enjoyed every second of it.
Yeah, so. That's good.
All right, Travis, you are on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Yeah, thank you. My question is, I have a row of viburnum in the back of our home that, well, it's a screen against our neighbor's garage. And the two viburnum that are on the right, on the east, to the east, have really full foliage. They bloom really good. But the further you get to the west, they get thinner and thinner. And we do have a beech tree that's close by, so the ones on the left have a lot of shade, which I suspect is why they don't get as much foliage. But is there anything I can do to sort of boost those so that, you know, it looks a little fuller, a little more uniform?
Probably not. Depending on what kind of viburnum it is, most viburnums are full sun plants, so that's your problem. So that gives you a good opportunity to get some diversity in there, maybe get some more shade-loving plants.
Okay. Is there some these are pretty tall, so they're about 8 foot. I mean, is there something that takes a lot of shade that would get that high?
You know, you could start looking at things like spice bush, calycanthus, Carolina allspice, those kinds of things would be good.
All right, Travis, good question, and we appreciate it. And it's been a very good show, guys.
Yes.
Yeah. We even gave away some cucumber seeds.
Great customer.
Because we don't want to run out of pickles.
That's right. Get your pickles, man.
That's right. Steve Millett, Jerry Pence, guys, appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you,
Scott. You're awesome.
It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. So we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong, because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled-up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night, pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama. Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.